She looked from Richard to the Marquis, her eyes lingering on their manacled hands, on the heavy chains that bound them to the black iron pillars. She looked very vulnerable. And then she turned away and walked to the limit of her own chain until she stood in front of the black door made of flint and tarnished silver. There was no keyhole. She put the palm of her right hand on the door and closed her eyes. Let the door tell her where it opened, what it could do, finding those places inside herself that corresponded with the door. When she pulled her hand away, there was a keyhole that had not been there before. A white light lanced out from behind the keyhole, sharp and bright as a laser in the candlelit darkness of the hall. The girl pushed the silver key into the keyhole. There was a pause, and then she turned it in the lock. Something went click, and there was a chiming noise, and suddenly the door was framed in light. "When I am gone," said the angel, very quietly, to Mr. Croup and Mr. Vandemar, with charm and with kindness and with compassion. "Kill them all, howsoever you wish." It turned back to the door, which door was pulling open. It was opening slowly, as if there was great resistance. She was sweating. "So your employer's leaving," said the Marquis to Mr. Croup. "I hope you've both been paid in full." Croup peered at the Marquis and said, "What?" "Well," said Richard, wondering what the Marquis was trying to do, but willing to play along, "you don't think you're ever going to see him again, do you?" Mr. Vandemar blinked slowly, like an antique camera, and said, "What?" Mr. Croup scratched his chin. "The corpses to be have a point," he said to Mr. Vandemar. He walked towards the angel, who stood, arms folded, in front of the door. "Sir, it might be wise for you to settle up before you commence the next stage of your travels." The angel turned and looked down at him as if he were less important than the least speck of dirt. Then it turned away. Richard wondered what it was contemplating. "It is of no matter now," said the angel. "Soon all the rewards your revolting little minds can conceive of will be yours when I have my throne." "Jam tomorrow, eh?" said Richard. "Don't like jam," said Mr. Vandemar. "Makes me belch." Mr. Croup waggled a finger at Mr. Vandemar. "He's welching out on us," he said. "You don't welch on Mr. Croup and Mr. Vandemar, me bucko. We collect our debts." Mr. Vandemar walked over to where Mr. Croup was standing. "In full," he said.
"With interest,"
barked Mr. Croup. "And meat hooks," said Mr. Vandemar. "From heaven," called Richard from behind them. Mr. Croup and Mr. Vandemar walked towards the contemplative angel.
"Hey,"
said Mr. Croup. The door had opened, only a crack, but it was open. Light flooded through the crack in the door. The angel took a step forward. It was as if it were dreaming with its eyes wide open. The light from the crack in the door bathed its face, and it drank it in like wine. "Have no fear," it said, "for when the vastness of creation is mine, and they gather about my throne to sing hosannas to my name, I shall reward the worthy and cast down those who are hateful in my sight." And then it muttered something else under its breath. Richard was never certain exactly what it had said, although, he later maintained, it had sounded a great deal like "Bloody Gabriel for a start." With an effort, Dor wrenched the black door fully open. The view through the door was blinding in its intensity, a swirling maelstrom of colour and light. Richard squinted his eyes and turned his head away from the glare, all vicious orange and retinal purple. Is that what heaven looks like? It seems more like hell. And then he felt the wind. A candle flew past his head and vanished through the door, and then another. And then the air was filled with candles, all spinning and tumbling through the air, heading for the light. It was as if the whole room were being sucked through the door. It was more than a wind, though. Richard knew that. His wrists began to hurt where they were manacled. It was as if, suddenly, he weighed twice as much as he ever had before. And then his perspective changed. The view through the doorway, it was looking down. It was not merely the wind that was pulling everything towards the door. It was gravity. The wind was only the air in the hall being sucked into the place on the other side of the door. He wondered what was on the other side of the door. The surface of a star, perhaps, or the event horizon of a black hole, or something he could not even imagine. Islington grabbed hold of the pillar beside the door and held on desperately. "That's not heaven!" it shouted, grey eyes flashing spittle on its perfect lips. "You mad little witch! What have you done?" Dor was clutching the chains that held her to the black pillar, white-knuckled. There was triumph in her eyes. Mr. Vandemar had caught hold of a table leg, while Mr. Croup, in his turn, had caught hold of Mr. Vandemar. "It wasn't the real key," said Dor, triumphantly, over the roar of the wind. "That was just a copy of the key I had Hammersmith make in the market." "But it opened the door!" screamed the angel. "No," said the girl with the opal eyes, distantly. "I opened a door. As far and hard away as I could, I opened a door." There was no longer any trace of kindness or compassion on the angel's face, only hatred, pure and honest and cold. "I will kill you," it told her.
"Like you killed my family? I don't think you're going to kill anyone anymore."
The angel was hanging onto the pillar with pale fingers, but its body was at a 90-degree angle to the room and was most of the way through the door. It looked both comical and dreadful. It licked its lips.
"Stop it," it pleaded. "Close the door. I'll tell you where your sister is. She's still alive."
Dor flinched. And Islington was sucked through the door, a tiny plummeting finger shrinking as it tumbled into the blinding gulf beyond. The pull was getting stronger. Richard prayed that his chains and manacles would hold. He could feel himself being sucked towards the opening, and from the corner of his eye he could see the Marquis dangling from his chains like a string puppet being sucked up by a vacuum cleaner. The table, the leg of which Mr. Vandemar was holding tightly, flew through the air and jammed in the open doorway. Mr. Croup and Mr. Vandemar were dangling out of the door. Mr. Croup, who was clinging, quite literally, to Mr. Vandemar's coattails, took a deep breath and began slowly to clamber hand over hand up Mr. Vandemar's back. The table creaked. Mr. Croup looked at Dor, and he smiled like a fox on really nasty drugs.
"I killed your family," said Mr. Croup. "Not him, and now I'm finally going to finish the—"
It was at that moment that the fabric of Mr. Vandemar's dark suit gave way. Mr. Croup tumbled, screaming, into the void, clutching a long strip of black fabric. Mr. Vandemar looked down at the flailing figure of Mr. Croup as it fell away from them. He, too, looked over at Dor, but there was no menace in his gaze. He shrugged, as best one can shrug while holding onto a table leg for dear life, and then he said mildly, "Bye-bye," and he let go of the table leg. Silently, he plunged through the door into the light, shrinking as he fell, heading for the tiny figure of Mr. Croup. Soon the two shapes merged into one little blob of blackness in a sea of churning purple and white and orange light, and then the black dot, too, was gone. It made some sort of sense, Richard thought. They were a team, after all.